and radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies.
Rick Adams is on.
Yes, we are. Good afternoon if you're listening to us live, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Adams Uncensored here only on Republic Broadcasting Network. And remember to support her sponsors and to support the network itself. Today is the 10th of October, 2020. Many things we have planned for you today. We're going to have a special guest in about 10 minutes or so on the program. Hopefully we can connect. And boy, I'll tell you, I'm rereading the scriptures again on this Columbus Day weekend too, and looking at the past, America's past, and particularly the scriptures and history and prophecy unfolding at an incredible rate. And I'm now in 1 Kings chapter 12. Fascinating, because Solomon's going bye-bye, King Solomon, son of David. You know, he started out beautiful, as I said last week. He really did. He was a much better king than his grandfather. Well, he was a much better king than Saul. I mean, Saul was a disaster. And we've got a Saul right now in Washington. And we're going to go maybe from a Saul possibly to an out-and-out, I don't know who it might be. It certainly isn't going to be Elijah. It's possible that it might be one of the other bad guy kings, And there are quite a few of them, in Assay, for instance. But be that as it may, King Solomon made his fatal mistake when he let everybody down, including his own father, King David. In chapter 1 of 1 Kings 11, verse 1. But King Solomon loved many strange women, all of the women he married, 700, 300 concubines, was it? Oh, my goodness. Together with the daughters of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, women of the Ammonites, women of the Edomites, the Zidonians, and the Hittites. And though some of these were not enemies of Israel, the Ammonites and the Moabites, so forth, they all did the same thing. They all worshipped foreign gods. They all worshipped these lesser gods. And the one thing that God always says in his commandments, and he always says to remind his people of, to honor him as the God of gods, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of all that he created in the first 6 days as well. So he says he's a jealous God, and he says he doesn't want you to worship anyone else but him. And this is where America has gone down the tubes, where America has slid down that slippery slope to judgment. She too, the Israel of God today, has committed that sin that is a deadly sin, one of the deadliest sins that you can commit, idolatry, jumping into bed with these others who bring forth their gods, and their god of many, many different forms, whether it's Molech or whether it's Jolech, or, as I said, whether it's the god of the Zidonians and any of the others, he gets very angry. So as a result, in verse 2, of course, we note that of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of true Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love. Well, he did for a long time. And as I said, he had 700 wives, you know, all these you know, concubines, princesses, and 300 of the concubines, by the way. And then they all started turning his love affair, his heart, his own personal mind, his beliefs away from the God that gave him that kingship, that gave him that position, that entrusted it to him. If you read on in the whole chapter of 1 Kings, chapter 11, you will find, for it did come to pass, Solomon was old, that his wives turned to his heart, and other gods did turn his heart on. And of course, he was not perfect with the Lord, as was the heart of David, his father. You know, David, his father, was in good shape that way. He had other problems, but when it came to idolatry, he never allowed it to come in. And for that, God was eternally grateful for him. A man after his own heart. Now, today, we are in a much worse position. Not only have we as a Christian and Israelite nation of the Bible not only turned against God unto these other gods, but we have blasphemed his name. We have done it openly. We have attributed to him things that are of Satan and neglected him in every single way that we possibly could have. So we have committed the worst sins as a nation to whom much has been given, and now much has been taken from. And so on this Columbus Day weekend especially, we need to recall these things and consider these things. We, the people of this nation who know who we are, who know who the enemy is, we need to grasp it now more than ever before. We're already burning incense, you see, as Solomon started to do, and sacrificing unto their gods. We're sacrificing not only our very ideologies, our very, you know, predilections, if you will, our very inner being, our soul, but now physically. He said it in Deuteronomy chapter 28, you'll sacrifice your children to their gods, you'll send them off to wars, you'll serve the god of Satan and his lesser gods on this earth, and his children, most of all, you'll serve his children in wars that are not of benefit to you, your country, or your people. But those are the curses, you see, in Deuteronomy chapter 28. These things will befall you in the latter day. And as a result, of course, as Solomon grew old and withered, he finally passed and was buried with his fathers. Then, of course, we have a new king coming, and then we have this big war going on between Jeroboam, you know, and Rehoboam, two sons, the two kings. And Rehoboam had obviously many good points. He was of Judah, to continue that Judah seed line. And the house of Israel under Jeroboam split off, and they were pretty bad. They were getting pretty, pretty out of hand. But God let them kill each other and fight each other, and it pained him and grieved him that they would do this, unfortunately. But this is always the way. Now, it sounds very similar to America today. Now, what's going on between the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom of Israel in here, America, the land of the free, the home of the brave? Well, we have become neither free nor brave. And that's what makes me giggle. I heard somebody call a talk show recently, and he says, oh, I'm so happy, you know, to this particular host who's a militarist and said that you served our country and our freedoms. And I scratch my wooden head, and I'm saying, what freedoms are we talking about? Not the free nation that we set out to be? The colonies? No. We're a governmental monstrosity, a nation that is now beset with more tyrannical edicts, more control, in the name of health even, and everything under the sun than we ever have seen before. All from the 20th century onward. It's been one continuous downward slope, unfortunately. But that's the reality. The reality is that we have failed God, and now he's failed us. He's turned on us, on this nation. Now, not us individually, of course. No, that's not the case at all. But as a people, as a nation, friends, in a few short weeks, there'll be another selection. And I can assure you that regardless of who wins, we will lose. I can give you my God's honest guarantee. We will lose far more than we've lost in these last 4 years. Because Donald J. Trump has very little to do with it. It's all about God's judgment, his plan, and how he's using these people that he's put in power for the negative part of his plan. And we can see that in Isaiah chapter 3, 4, and 5 and onward. Neighbor against neighbor, countryman against countryman, and God has installed, what, babes, fools, names to rule over them. Well, now you see why there's so much name-calling, hollering, yelling, screaming, ranting, and raving. And we know that all of this, from Scripture, is part of that judgment. So, what should we be doing? Voting? No. Should we be participating in some kind of electoral change? No. In my opinion, it's not going to work. But that's just my opinion, my view, and there are others who have different views. That's fine. That's wonderful. But we'll wait and see what comes to pass. But I can assure you most assuredly that we are entering into the darkest days this nation's history. And this world's history in this age, the darkest days are yet to come. It will only get worse monetarily, yes, economically, politically, academically, and most of all, religiously. We have the Pope, you know, calling for a war against what he calls capitalism, against freedom, against greed, against individual product, you know, initiative, and calling for a new world economic order. Well, that's probably right out of the book of Daniel, you know, chapter 11 and the raiser of taxes, you know. Worldwide global taxes, worldwide global encroachment upon economic freedom, and all of this is really out of the cesspool of the 20th century of America's imperial and interventionist past. So we need to understand that. Thanks for your service. Yeah, to what? To whom? Well, it's certainly not to America. It's certainly not to God. But it's in the name of God. It's wrapped up in the flag, you see. And now that flag is soiled. War. We have the angry red planet, Mars, now. Yes, they're all watching Mars because it's got such a glowing view. Right now, people are gazing at night, I think, you know, at the angry red planet, Mars. And all of this has some symbolic meaning as well, folks. It's sort of allegorical, and it's scriptural, too. We need to look at the signs in the heavens, the signs on the earth in these times. I'm going to bring up a guest in just a moment, and he has been here before, and he, of course, is very learned in the affairs of Persia in particular. And Iran, the people of Iran, the nation of Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, to be more precise. And he's been here several times in the past, and I haven't had him on in a long time. Now we hear more and more and more about Iran again and the latest plot to confront Iran's aggression against the United States interests, we're told. And we have this reported slur, I guess, the statement reported today in the Times of Israel about Mr. Trump using a swear word to describe something to do with Iran. It's the F-bomb, apparently, during a radio rally with conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh. The U.S. president has mentioned Tehran and warned them, don't blank around with us, or you will pay a heavy price, and so on and so forth. So, we know the rhetoric is there, but we know the action is there, too, and want to find out more. So let me see if I can bring up William O. Beeman, who is a professor emeritus from the University of Minnesota and also used to be here at Brown University in Rhode Island, where I am. And, of course, he is quite has written several books. and quite a scholar on the subject. So, again, let me welcome you, Bill Beam, into the program. Hello.
Hello. How are you, Rick? Nice to talk
to you. Fantastic. How are you? You're staying well?
Yes, thank you. I'm now living in California,
yes.
And we have a we're all sequestering here in California, trying to stay healthy and safe. So,
right. Do you have your mask on now while you're talking to me?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm here alone in a room, so I don't have anyone around me.
That's right. I won't tell Gavin Newsom or anyone else. Okay. Now, anyway, it's good to have you back. And it's been a while. And all that time, we've had these, you know, these altercations, these skirmishes, these attacks, literally, on Iran and Iranian targets, I guess, in Lebanon and Syria and so on and so forth. And what is your latest observation concerning where this has led us? And where it might lead us now?
Well, the U.S., the United States, during the Trump administration, has followed a bankrupt policy that we've tried to implement elsewhere, and that is to try to enact sanctions against Iran that would, in the words of the State Department, make life so miserable for Iranians that they would rise up and overthrow their own government. That is the what they think will actually happen. This is something that the United States is in the kind of bag of tricks of the United States that has existed for a very long time. We tried to do it in Lebanon. We tried to do it in Iraq. And we we're now trying to do it in Iran, and it's just simply not working. Trump withdrew from the JCPOA, Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the so-called Iran deal, whereas other European nations did not. And then the United States tried to enact additional sanctions according to a provision in the agreement. These were snapback sanctions if Iran violated the terms of the agreement. And the European and other members who were involved with the agreement said, I'm sorry, you've withdrawn from the agreement. You have no standing, whatever. And the United States went back to the United Nations and tried to get these sanctions reimposed. The Security Council, except for, I believe, it was either Guatemala or the Dominican Republic, unanimously agreed the United States had no standing. So the United States fell flat on its face in the international community. We would have been far better if we had stayed with the agreement in terms of what, you know, Trump wanted to accomplish, because then actually we'd have some legal standing in the international community. We no longer do. So all of the bluster and all of the yelling and all of the screaming that Trump has tried to enact with regard to Iran is absolutely falling on deaf ears and falling flat with the international community. And Iran has not collapsed. Iran has an extremely robust internal economy. They're able to produce really almost everything they need, except for a few things, medicine for one thing. And so they are they're far from being in a situation where they're going to collapse. And so I have to tell Americans, don't listen to Trump and don't listen to Washington. They have not been successful in getting Iran to capitulate on anything. It's a bankrupt foreign policy on their part.
Yes. I was just going to say that, you know, we've heard about now another, you know, group of sanctions or whatever, financial sanctions they'd like to place on Iran and so on and so forth. And I, based on the media reports, and of course we can't believe much of that, but the media reporting has basically been that, you know, the Iranian people are suffering. Not the government, but people, as always, are suffering from sanctions. And you're basically saying that they have a great resiliency domestically and economically speaking. Are they, in fact, are the people really experiencing a suffering because of sanctions that we have unilaterally placed on them, though?
Well, they have they have very restricted foreign currency, and Iranians were quite used to traveling, especially upper class Iranians were quite used to traveling abroad and traveling to Europe, and they can no longer do that with much much ease. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of building materials. Iran manufactures its own cars. It manufactures its own computers. And as I say, the internal economy is very robust. And they do have an export economy, aside from, exporting oil, which brings in, foreign exchange for them. And they're also selling, petroleum products, particularly liquefied natural gas to China. China is a major, major trade partner, and China is investing heavily in Iran at this point. So what the United States has essentially done is to drive Iran into the arms of both China and also Russia. So that's what we're seeing here. So China, Russia, India are now becoming the major trade partners for Iran. And the United States can't do really anything about that. And all of the blather and nonsense that's coming out of Washington about the Iranian people, you know, suffering in misery is a total lie. The poverty rate in Iran is lower than in the United States. Than in the United States. And that's a really interesting fact. When we talk about poverty rate, of course, we're talking about what your money buys and what kind of lifestyle you can support. And yes, the poverty rate is lower in Iran than here in our own country. What's coming out of Washington is nonsense. It's propaganda, and what Trump is banking on is the fact that for the past 40 years, any politician, since the Iranian Revolution and the hostage crisis, either whether you're a Democrat or whether you're a Republican, any politician can be assured that if they attack Iran, that will be have a positive effect on the electorate. So we're in a situation where nobody will say anything good about Iran, whether they're Democrat or Republican, because they know that attacking Iran is a positive for them in the political arena.
Yeah, among other reasons. You know, the amazing thing is that Iran gets accused for doing a lot of things today. And, you know, the picture we receive, the American public, of course, is that Iran is killing Americans in Syria and Lebanon or waging war, and they're with Hezbollah, and they're whatever Hezbollah is supposed to be, you know, a terrorist organization. Then, you know, I come back to the old refrain, is that one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. And you know...
Well, and not only that, but Hezbollah is now a major political force in Lebanon. They have a plurality with their allies. They have a plurality in the Lebanese parliament. They have elected officials that really dominate the government in Lebanon. Lebanon's having its own trouble, but the idea that Hezbollah is a terrorist organization exclusively is false.
An invader and so forth. That's the way we're given to believe, you see.
Well, the thing is that the people generally want to say that Lebanon is a force that's attacking Israel. Lebanon has not attacked Israel in 40 years.
It's the other way around.
There's been nothing that
they
has...
They have not attacked anybody. Actually, I don't know who they've attacked. Who has Lebanon attacked?
Well, they have been supporting the Assad regime in Syria. And the reason that they've been supporting the Assad regime in Syria is because Hezbollah is a Shiite military organization, or a Shiite political organization.
Yeah.
The Assad regime in Syria is also Shiite. They're a branch of Shiism, the Alawites. And the Hezbollah knows that if a group like ISIS, for instance, took over the government of Syria, that they would be coming for the Shiites in Lebanon next. So it really is self-defense on their part to support the Assad regime. And by the way, I'm not a supporter of the Assad regime. I think they've committed horrible atrocities. But Iran has a mutual defense treaty with Syria. They've had it since the 1980s because Syria was the only country in the region that actually would help Iran against the Iraq during the Iran-Iraq War from 1980 to 1988. So there is a legal. Yeah, that's right. Well,
Iran-Iraq War.
United States tilted toward.
Terrible, horrible effects, and we're reaping those effects now. Yeah, I remember when they were having this big debate about Iraq, not to sidestep, but to give a little more historical perspective, and they were saying, well, you know, we don't want to really destroy Iraq totally because then it would make Iran stronger, and we don't want Iran get stronger, so guess what? And they went and had that Bush war against Iraq. And then all of a sudden, we didn't think about it. Iran is the new enemy now. You know, we go all the way down that circle on the PNAC documents, you know, the nations that would be attacked or needed to be attacked by America on behalf of the regime in Israel, the Likud, and so forth, because they wanted to bring about their hegemonistic control, too, you know.
Right.
So, again, it's been one lie after another. And, you know, at this point, I'm all lied out. I don't know about you, but
absolutely.
Yeah.
The United States has promulgated the total lie that Iran, I'm quoting them, Iran has killed thousands of American soldiers in the Middle East. It's not true. It's simply not true. And the fact that we had General Soleimani, who was an advisor to Hezbollah and was actually one of the most important generals in combating ISIS in Iraq and in Syria, and Trump decided to just one day push a button and blast him off the planet, under the excuse that he was threatening that there was some plot to attack American troops in Iraq. That plot never was documented ever. Even though it was requested by journalists and also by politicians in Washington, it was never, ever documented. It was, as far as I can tell, a total and complete lie. And Trump just recently in the debate with Joe Biden touted that as an accomplishment of his administration. It was not an accomplishment; it was murder. And Soleimani was no threat to the United States, whatever. But he was a very effective general and a very effective organizer of pro-Iranian groups in Iraq, and also was an aide to to Hezbollah in Lebanon. But it was just simply an assassination. And if you want to say that Soleimani was a bad person because he was supporting the pro-Iranian forces in the region, you can certainly say that. But you know, to gin up the idea of a completely fictitious plot as an excuse for this assassination was despicable.
Nothing new in this American foreign policy of interventionism. All right, we'll come back with Professor William O. Beeman, our guest right now. If you have a question, you want to comment, you can call in at 800-313-9443. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
You're tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you. What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company? And it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks.
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive. Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EAZEOFF.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Nikki, great product. Have to try it for a few months to see results. After taking Extendovite for about 6 months, I have noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from carpal tunnel. I will continue to buy the product. Ken Peaks, 5 out of 5 stars. Works as advertised. This formula is very powerful. Be careful to follow directions. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure has stabilized and my lower edema has reduced. Lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. Thank you. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Rick Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio. And we are back with Bill Beaman. And, the situation is just one of a volley of lies. And that has been the way since day one with when it comes to interventionism and the foreign policy of America. You know, from 1956, the year that the Iranian government was overthrown, the Shah, and prior to that, you know, World War One and Two has always been this proclivity for starting a confrontation and blaming the other side, you know, whether it's the Lusitania, whether it's the Maine, or whatever, you know, another like false flag, and we got to go to war, and we got to go to war, and you know, it's funny because they said World War One would be the war to end all wars, you know, ever since then we've had nothing but war, you know, war for peace, war for freedom, war for democracy, and in most of these cases, you know, particularly Iraq, you know, I hearken back to that, Bill. I still can't believe it, that how many million children and people, civilians, were killed during the 80s. We had the Bush administration with Reagan and Bush to follow, and we had these sanctions placed on them. And sanctions are a weapon of war in and of themselves, as we know. You know, that literally prevented the people there from getting the medicines they needed because they were classified as sort of dual-use items, you know? And I'm thinking about that, and I'm saying to myself, people who are just innocents, had nothing to do with the government itself, regardless of what you thought of Saddam Hussein or what you think of Assad or anyone else. They had nothing to do with war or their government. And those are the expendables. You know, these are always the expendables, those innocent people and children dying for what? And then we had Bob Zelnick from, was it ABC News, saying that Saddam Hussein was taking babies off of incubators and all of this stuff to add to the mix. I mean, it really, I think it sickens our hearts if Americans only really knew the whole truth, you know, Bill.
Hello?
Yes, Bill. Did you hear what I just said?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry. I didn't catch the very, very last part of what you had said.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, I just summed up, and I said it just sickens our collective hearts here in America, I think, to the extent that we're allowed to know through independent media about just how much suffering was caused in the name of bringing about freedom and peace and democracy. And Iraq is a sickening example because they were on the way to becoming a top-class nation in terms of education and medicine and so forth, and all of that was just laid to waste, you know?
Yes, that's certainly true. I mean, I think that that Saddam Hussein was a very heavy-handed dictator in his country, but he was tasked with something which was nearly impossible, and that was holding together a country that really had no business being a nation. It was cobbled together after World War One by the British and partly the French. The United States had nothing to do with it. But three communities that had never been under one state structure together were slammed together, and they could only really be held together by a dictatorial force. Right now, we have a new situation in Iraq, in that effectively the country is now back to being a sort of federation of the three communities that were put together after World War One. The Kurdish section of Iraq is now virtually autonomous, and the Shia section in the south of Iraq is also operating pretty much autonomously. So we only have Baghdad in the middle is in a kind of a titular fashion the head of government, but they're working out essentially a federated system. And that's probably more natural for the community there. But we'll see over, you know, an extended period of time how that works out.
Yeah, by the way, I should add that your field basically has been anthropology mainly, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so you have so, dealt with humankind, so to speak, for a long time, and you've seen a lot of things close up and personal, I guess. You have visited those nations like Iran several times and Iraq. Have you visited Iraq as well?
Yes. And I've really been to every country in the Middle East for, you know, extended periods of time. I've spent a lot of time in Iran. I spent some time in Iraq and the Gulf states. I know all of them pretty well, including Saudi Arabia. I did a project in Saudi Arabia 2 years ago. It was quite interesting.
Yeah. Now that brings me to the next subject, and that has to be this latest so-called peace plan, which Trump, of course, has endorsed. Netanyahu apparently is very excited about it. And what it means is getting Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates — they haven't got Saudi Arabia on yet — but United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and hope to bring on a host of other nations that are not necessarily very friendly, of course, with Iran. And this seems to be not a peace plan, but the latest maneuver toward conquering the enemy, when you know you can't do it. You cannot conquer Iran militarily. So you know darn right well that there's something more here than meets the eye. The military requests for planes, you know, for the UAE, I believe, for these F-35 jets, so on and so forth, has yet to go through Congress. But if they have their way, of course they will get through the obedient Congress and approve of whatever it is it takes to in some way mollify or soften Iran. Is that basically what's happening there? Give us your perspective on it, Bill.
No, absolutely not, actually. This so-called peace agreement is a sham. It has absolutely no meaning whatever. What we have to look towards is the fact that personally Trump has investments in the UAE. He has hotels, he has other investments, and he's been courting the rulers of the UAE. There are seven sheikhdoms in the UAE. He's been personally courting them for some time for essentially financial relations. And the UAE has never been hostile to Israel, ever. That's an interesting fact. In fact, the UAE has been trading with Israel on a regular basis for years and years. They've had regular trade with Israel through third countries. And what this simply has done is made it very easy for the UAE to trade directly with Israel now. And guess what? Guess who benefits from this? Iran benefits from this, because Iran has also been trading with Israel on a regular basis for more than 40 years through third countries. Most Iranian businesses have outposts in the UAE. Many Iranians have UAE passports as well. So this makes it possible for Iran to trade directly with Israel and also to travel directly to Israel. And since there's an extremely large Iranian Jewish community in Israel that travels back and forth to Iran regularly, this makes it extremely easy for them to do this. So what the United States has inadvertently done, and I don't think it's inadvertent, it's just stupidity, what they've done is actually opened an economic lifeline to Iran through this deal with the UAE. And with regard to Bahrain comes on board because the United States has a very large naval outpost in Bahrain. And Bahrain is majority Shia, and with a Sunni ruler that has tried to oppress them, the Bahrainis feel that if they have a close relationship with Israel, and that the United States will be inclined to support them if there's ever any civil unrest within Bahrain. Saudi Arabia is not going to come on board, and the other Gulf states have also not agreed to come on board. If Saudi Arabia ever could be persuaded to lift sanctions against Qatar, which has major, major economic relations with Iran because they share a huge gas field, then Qatar might also be persuaded to do this. But this is the agreement with UAE and Bahrain would be about the same as if, for instance, we announced a new treaty relationship between Israel and the Seychelles, or Israel and Mozambique. It absolutely has nothing to do with peace in the Middle East, and what it does is simply ratify an existing relationship. And it's a stunt, really. That was promulgated by Trump during an election year in order to try to get some attention. But as I say, the idea that it somehow should result in Trump getting the Nobel Peace Prize or something like that is absurd. And by the way, the fact that Trump was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize is foolish. As an academic, I can nominate anybody for the Nobel Peace Prize. There were 300 and some nominees this year, Trump having been nominated by an extreme right-wing Swedish politician who was anti-immigrant. So the Trump administration seems to want to make publicity out of the fact that he was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, but it's meaningless, absolutely and totally meaningless.
Yeah, peace in our time. And anyway, okay, let's take a call here from Joe, who wants to say something or ask a question of Bill Beaman. Hello, Joe, you're on the program.
Hi, Rick.
Yes.
Hi, Bill.
Yes.
Bill, we have a vice presidential candidate running for office this time. I understand that her upbringing was Hindu. She was a Hindu. And later on, I believe...
Her family is... her mother was is Indian. Yeah, that's right.
Right. Considering the fact that she could potentially be a presidential host in the future, what would that mean for the Middle East?
Well, I think that Kamala Harris is absolutely sympathetic to the kinds of policies that were that we've been have been promulgating in the United States up until the Trump administration. Trump is an isolationist. He believes that the United States should be should not be participating in any global agreements or global economy at all. He's withdrawn from trade agreements everywhere. He's put tariffs on other nations. He has withdrawn from the international Criminal Court, from the Paris Climate Accords, practically every international agreement that had been negotiated in decades before have been canceled by the Trump administration because he believes that he can make deals point to point with individual nations. And Kamala Harris has not been involved with international relations, but I can tell you that she and it will definitely, and Joe Biden will definitely go back toward looking at our relations with the world in a far more global fashion than in this atomistic individual fashion, which really hasn't worked. The end result from the Trump administration is that we're being isolated from the rest of the world. People don't trust us. People don't want to trade with us. That has to be reversed. So I'm pretty sure that Kamala Harris is going to be in the forefront of this outreach to the global community. By the way, her cousins and relatives in India were thrilled by her nomination as vice president.
And what relationship? What relationship would she have with China? What kind of working relationship would that be? Let's say someday she were president.
You know, I honestly don't want to get out of my depth here. I can't really answer that. That is a question that I don't think has even been put to her. But I would also enjoy knowing her answer to that question. I'm sorry, I can't really speculate on that.
That's all right, Bill. Thank you.
All right, Joe.
Thank you.
Excellent, good questions, though. Very good questions. And, the thing is in the international arena, it's ironic how we go from the zig to the zag. You know, I always talk about we go from the Carter years to the Reagan years, go from the Reagan to Bush, and Bush then again back to the Democrats. And, you know, we zig and we zag, but we're still going in the same direction, basically, and that is of more meddling, you know, international or world meddling. And, you know, whether it's unilateral or multilateral, to me, it's still, you know, it's combative, yes, but it's also like almost building this one world system, you know, the global union. And at the same time, you know, that, of course, Bill, you know, from my perspective, has a lot of dangers hidden within it. And, of course, that means, you know, how much of the sovereignty of the United States are we willing to give up? And where are our troops going to go next? You know, you mentioned Iraq before. And, you know, isn't it interesting that Trump is talking about this great withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan? But in reality, we still have, the largest embassy in the Middle East in Iraq? And is that embassy there just for peace? Or is there something more afoul there in the future? You know?
Well, you know, Trump wanted to, Trump thought that the invasion of Iraq in 2003 was botched because we didn't grab all the oil in Iraq.
Yeah.
which was really absurd. I mean, we actually have a glut of oil here in the United States. Oil prices are down. We're now the largest producer of fossil fuels in the world, which, by the way, happened during the Obama administration, not during the Trump administration. And the idea that we would need oil from Iraq and we should grab it all is actually a very short-sighted move. There is no particular reason why we need that oil.
Right, right. Okay, we'll get back to that. And anybody else have another question is fine. We have a few minutes left in this hour with Bill Beaman, our guest, and he's an expert particularly on Iran. Rick Adams, Uncensored, Facebook page, and we will return in just about 2 minutes.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extend your life with
Extendovite. Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. Amazon customer, 5 out of 5 stars. I'm quite happy about it. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs, and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. Dr. Sam Surreal. Good product and ingredients. Kept my blood pressure normal after mild heart attack in 2015. Switched to plant-based diet also to reverse atherosclerosis. John Bispico's, 5 out of 5 stars. Built up my immune system. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
How dare you call yourselves patriots and heroes? If you say the government is in a conspiracy to take your freedom away, you are just plain wrong. There is no freedom.
All right, thanks, Bill. We're back in just a few moments here. I have to ask you, before we run out of time, Bill, you know, based on what I just said before the break, as far as this latest policy boast that we're going to withdraw from Afghanistan and we're going to withdraw troops and bring them home, you know, how many times we've heard that until the next war. But what does that mean, really, in terms of the ultimate future war scenario? with Iraq, given the fact of such a heavy U.S. troop presence there and the embassy and all of the other apparatus that we have there? What do you think of that boast?
Well, the United States has been trying to withdraw from both Iraq and Afghanistan for a very, very long time. But the difficulty is that whenever the United States announces that it's going to withdraw from these countries, it never happens. Under the Obama administration, the Obama administration wanted to withdraw our troops from Iraq, and one of the reasons was that the Iraqi government told us to leave. The conditions for us to stay were that the United States tried to negotiate what we call extraterritoriality. That is that no U.S. military person who had committed a crime in Iraq would ever be tried by under Iraqi law. The Iraqis rejected that, and we were supposed to go. But then ISIS cropped up. And when the ISIS threat cropped up, the United States stayed with the acquiescence of the Iraqi government. Now the ISIS threat seems to have been withdrawn, and there is an opportunity for us to withdraw from Iraq at this time. But the Trump administration has more or less ignored that opportunity. They've talked about withdrawing from Afghanistan, but the negotiations have taken place with the Taliban in Afghanistan, and they've been phony negotiations, completely phony negotiations. And the Taliban have strung us along for some time, but you can be assured that if the United States did withdraw from Afghanistan, the Taliban would move to take over the country, and that would look bad for Trump, so he doesn't want to do that right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, you've written a couple of books, and we're almost out of time, so just tell people about how they can access your work and your website, and they can see your books on there as well.
Well, you can go to Amazon.com and just look for my name, but I think the book that that deals mostly with the U.S.-Iranian relations was a book that was written some time ago. It's called The Great Satan Versus the Mad Mullahs, How the United States and Iran Demonize Each Other. And although it was written some time ago, it's still very much the case today. So if you read it, you'll see something about the dynamics between Iran and the United States.
Yeah. Thank you for your great yeoman work and your great knowledge of the area. It's always a pleasure having you on, Bill. We'll have you back, okay?
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
Okay, you take care now. Have a good weekend. All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay, we got a break, though. We have another hour coming up. Some more interesting tidbits of information, folks, and topics for discussion on this holiday weekend. We'll be right back. Hour number two, Rick Adams Uncensored. We will do that in just a couple of minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an Energy Planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.